we're back. Welcome back to another episode of the Black Art Podcast with me, Lloyd.
Me, Jake.
It has been a crazy, crazy... Has it been 2 weeks since the last one?
Yeah. You dropped the ball there last week.
Did I really, though?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, well, I mean, I wasn't even in the country. What have you been doing for the last fortnight, man?
Yeah, mostly just sobbing. Sobbing quietly in the corner there. I didn't have the Black Art Podcast to record.
Don't make me feel this way, dude.
No, I've been trying to be healthy. I've been trying to be good. I started to dislike myself a little for the whole chubby mentalist that was going on. So I'm counting calories and running again and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's like when you do this stuff, you're miserable in the process, but ultimately you're happier.
Yes.
It's a real strange one. Like when I think back, like when I was dieting and running, it's like, oh, it's a slog, it's grueling. And then looking back, I was like, oh my God, I was so happy doing that.
Yeah. There's a little bit of pleasure in, like, you know, putting yourself in an uncomfortable position by not eating as much or letting yourself be hungry and, like, kind of, I don't know, spiritually, I guess, there's a little bit of, it's nice to suffer a little bit.
It's that feeling of not letting yourself be, take it easy and be soft.
Yeah.
You know, like we're meant to run, we're meant to move, we're meant to, like, well, I mean, apparently humans are built to fast.
Sorry, there's a motorcycle convention going past mine right now.
Oh, I can't hear a thing. It's completely silent to me. That helps. Oh. Completely silent.
But you're back.
I'm back, yeah. Been to Miami filming the Dex trailer for the past week.
Ooh.
I got back in on 10:40 a.m. on Thursday. Long haul is such a nightmare for me, man, because I can't sleep on flights.
Yeah,
the only flight I've slept on two flights, two long haul flights, and I must have had like 100 or so. But the last time I slept on a long haul flight, I was like really, 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 really sick. And Kaylee made like a bed for me out of her body and pillows and stuff. But like, yeah, so long haul, although like it was only a short flight this time, it was 9 hours or 8.5 hours. Which comparatively is like super short for long. It's like one of the shorter long haul type flights you can take. It's like the 5 hours in the preamble to the airport, like 3 hours of travel to London Heathrow and then 2 hours wait. And then it's the 8.5 hour flight, then the hour to get out of the airport because in the US, like with the customs and the British passport situation and everything. And then like the hour in the taxi or the Airbnb to get in the taxi to get to the Airbnb. You know, it all adds up, man, and it's crazy. So I don't know whether it's just because I'm rusty or I'm just too old. But I think that might be my last long haul flight for the next 5-6 years. I really didn't enjoy the travel. But on the flip side, it was such a wild week in Miami. I see my first robbery. which is pretty cool. Have you seen someone get a gun pulled on them? Which was nice. I said, like, I wanted to see a gun get pulled on someone. Because it's America, you know, they have no care for human life. So it was kind of nice to experience that vicariously at least. but mainly we were there to film Dex, which has been the longest project I've ever worked on. If anyone is new to the Black Art Podcast, this is like sort of been haunting myself and Javier for the last couple of years, because Dex is a system, it's a device that secretly gives you access to any single playing card in the deck, and you hide it in your pocket. So basically you can start a trick with empty hands, they name a playing card, and as you would like normally stand with like one hand in your pocket or just casually being there present, you now have that card secretly hidden in the palm of your hand, or you can just bring it out of your pocket, whatever you want to do. Myself and Javier stupidly put performances on our YouTube a couple of years back, I think like 2 years ago on my channel or something, yeah. At least a year ago. And since then, our inboxes have been berated or emailed privately, phone number, people can get my phone numbers, messages, texts, whatever, just constantly asking for it. So it was kind of like a surreal thing to be out over there filming it and having it actually arrive or being on its en route to the Murphy's warehouse. But it was, man, it was a trip. It was so cool. Me and Javi were like, this is such a weird thing. Let me tell you something cool that happened. The whole theme of Dex is lightning, because it's lightning quick, right? And subjectively, the fastest single pocket skinny jean index in the world. So designed the ultra slim one pocket, because I know there's a lot of debate over what's the fastest index in the world. Some people get very angry about this. This is designed for one pocket and it's for skinny jeans. So in its field, we believe it's the fastest in the world, but who knows? I know some people get so upset about this.
Yeah, it's crazy how pedantic people get over it.
Weirdest story is this one person that commented saying that another index is officially the fastest index in the world. How dare I think that Dex is? So I asked them, how fast was Dex when they used it? Because they haven't used it. Mental. Anyway. So the whole theme of Dex is, or at least the logo of Dex is D-E, the letters D-E and the X with a lightning bolt in one half of it, because the theme is that it's lightning quick. And on the last day, the last part of the shoot, and the last location, we were doing some B-roll, and lightning started striking in the background. Bolts of lightning on the very last shot of the whole thing.
So cool.
It was bizarre. In fact, you know, there was actually thunder and lightning throughout the whole week because it was Miami. We hadn't planned for it to be thunder and lightning throughout the whole week. There's a certain shot in the trailer where Javier says, imagine you get it with lightning speed. And around the time, like within a second or two either side of him saying that, there's actually thunder in the background. So you can't pick it up, but you can kind of awkwardly pick it up on the mic, but it makes all the rest of the audio. So in the trailer, I put a little sound effect of thunder happening as he says the word lightning. But I didn't think to put that in there before or after. Like, I didn't think, oh, I'll time it and put that in. I put it in there because, well, you hear thunder as that clip is being done. So it's kind of cool. But loads of serendipitous stuff happened over the entire week. Me and Javier were just like, this is such a weird thing that, like, whole theme is lightning, and the very last take on the very last day, lightning stuff. So we actually managed to capture it on camera, and I'm gonna try and use it as like the last clip of the trailer, maybe. But dude, it was in terms of creativity, it was a wild week. If you're new to the Blackout Podcast, we discuss all things magic creativity related. So we sort of have open discussions on creativity, how to create new magic. We talk about magic methods, new methods, how to implement old methods, how to completely take your old existing tricks and put a new script on them to make them feel fresh and young and new again. And so if that's what you're here to listen to, this is what you're going to get.
Yeah. And I love that you mentioned creatively it being a good week, because that is definitely the metric which I'm most interested in measuring my time.
Dude, we went in there with a mindset of teaching Dex. So for the first 3 days, we did the instructions to Dex. And what kind of ended up happening, you'll see this a lot, is that we'll be talking about one thing, like, oh, you can do this, you can do that, you can do that. And then suddenly it goes off on a complete tangent and we end up leaving it in or coming back to re-record it or adding bits, extra ideas in there. It's kind of hard to describe what we were creating without delving too much into it, but there's something to be said about taking one device and just extrapolating as much as you can out of it. But do you want to know one thing I was thinking of?
Yeah.
Not related to Dex, but kind of related to Dex. I wonder if we can take this any further.
Yeah, for sure.
Which was mystery cards, right? The folded up card plot. So you place a card down and then you show it's the card they named normally. So they name a card and it's there. And there's two ways that I see the mystery card being done. And I think one is superior to the other. Or one leaves you a lot more open to different methods. And I think it gives you a better reaction.
Okay.
Overall. And I've never heard this discussed before, but I'm sure, as always, we are the last people to the totem pole. My attitude to creativity and magic now is when if you create something, your job it isn't to see if it's been done before. Your job is just to find out who did it before, because everything's been done.
Yeah.
But at least in this context, I haven't heard it. And it's this, is that what I've realized is that sometimes when you perform a mist, say the cards folded up on the table, right? So the playing card folded up on the table, and you ask someone to name a card, they name a card, then you pick it up and you open it, and it's that card, right? And you get a reaction, and they freak out. Yeah. But there's also another way of doing it, which is to not begin with a card out in the open folded, and then to have a card named, then you reveal the card in the location, like in a mystery box or like a David Stone cell where it's in the back of the phone, and then you reveal the card. And I've never put too much thought into the differences in that presentation, whether it's out in the open or like you place a mystery box out in the open beforehand, or it gets revealed in a crazy location. And then, but twofold, there's some thought here, right? I don't know if you think one is better than the other. What do you think before I go into my thinking?
It depends so much on what the effect is as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like I prefer when, I think, okay, to ground it in reality, I think I prefer when an object is tangible in front of them and can't be messed with or touched. But so much of magic is, you know, the appearance, and so much of what I love is a strange location. So it just depends on what the effect is.
Yeah, true. Like if you're going to just have it there, play the part of this is real magic, or this is real mentalism, a mind reading. Name the card, it's going to be there. Then it's important to have it isolated and in full view the entire time. But what I notice is that if you do it, so if you do it that way, you get one reaction, basically, which is the reaction of when it's the final moment when it's revealed to be the card. Yeah. And the other version of doing it is that when it's revealed in a location they're not expecting.
Mm.
So I'm using David Phone's cell. For anyone that hasn't seen that trick, it's a trick where more like an old Nokia style phone is sort of dummy used. But then the card is shown folded up in the battery of the phone, and then then you take it out and it's the one. The reason I'm using that as an example is that out of all the magicians that do mystery card effect and all the feedback I hear from lay people, that's the one trick that I've had. Some, like my sister-in-law was like, oh my God, this magician, the card was in the phone, crazy. And the reason I bring up the difference that I see is this, in terms of presentation and then method, is that if you see a movie and I don't know, is it Snatch or something, where you're shown at the very end of the movie, you show at the beginning there's a car crash, and then it says 90 minutes, and then it goes 90 minutes earlier.
Yeah.
By placing the card down in full view before you begin the trick, you're telling them what's going to happen before the trick begins. They know the ending.
Yeah, and people kind of hate the record scratch. I bet you're wondering how I got in this situation, huh?
90s movie style, right? But the thing, right? But the thing is, right? So the card's out in full view. That you kind of given away the ending before the film begins, or before the trick begins, which, depending on again your script and your routine, can be exactly what you want to do, and it can probably potentially done correctly feel more impossible if they try to backtrack it, right? But the thing that I notice is that you get when it's revealed in a surprise location that they're not expecting, you get two reactions. You get the reaction to a card just being there, and the illusion the assumption that it's their card. And then when it's revealed, you get a secondary reaction. And often I find that when you perform it this way, the secondary reaction is kind of either sometimes on par, sometimes it's more, but sometimes it's actually, I think, shockingly less of a reaction. We like my little weird emoji thing is doing a thumbs up. I don't know if that's a some sort of weird Apple new gesture technology. I think it is, right? What's it called? But people can't even see this on streaming services. But anyway, I don't know how many times you can recount where you've done this and people will react. Like, say it's card under box. Famously, like normally the second phase, it's a dupe. It's an X card under the box, yeah. And they react to the card just being face down, and then you have to do a double lift or switch to reveal it. But people don't care because they react to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So normally with card to box, you get the card signed, you palm it off, you secretly load it as they're all being misdirected by a flourish or a fan, and then you reveal it under the box. The second time, you place a random card face down and under the box when they're not looking, and then when you reveal it, they just react to that because they're preconditioned. So what I'm getting to with this is that when you do a card in full view from the beginning, they sort of, A, know where the story is going. And if you've read Joshua J's sort of How Magicians Think book, and I've read parts of it, I haven't finished the whole thing because I've never finished books, but I think there's an assumption or conclusion that like the best magic or the strongest magic, or at least I've heard this being spoken about, is that it is having the element of surprise to it.
Yeah.
So if you place a card in full view that's folded up, before the trick begins and you say, name a card, there's no real elements of surprise when they open it up and it's the card that's named. It's impossible. Don't get me wrong. It's an impossible effect, but it doesn't kick them from the side. It doesn't have that like element of Shazam, you know? Yeah. I don't know how to describe it, but the thing that like makes, it's the difference really between, I suppose, mentalism, possibly not mentalism, but it's that difference between like trick and magic, maybe.
Yeah, I get you.
You know, and also then method wise, it's a lot more difficult as well, right? You're making life a lot harder for yourself by doing this, by because you normally you'd have to switch the card at exactly the moment they think you're going to switch the card.
Yeah,
generally, right? There's many different methods of doing it, but if that playing card has been left in full view the entire time and you open it and it's that card, normally the method is that you switch it at that point, whether you use like a J-Sankey paperclip or a switching device or slight hand-based switch. The switch generally happens at exactly the moment when they think it happens, which I always feel is such a low point. Not low point because there's some incredible versions of this, but it's always like the... I hate doing magic where the spectators do guess the method.
Yeah.
So in this case, it would be, he must have switched the card. Because they'd be right.
Yeah. You know what I mean? They're right. It's a really, really tough one to kind of handle because obviously I've done something, yes, but...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm okay for magic purposes saying, no, I didn't.
Yeah.
Because it keeps that, instills that feeling. But even just like in terms of like Zen as a magician, you don't want to hear that, right?
No.
It's like there's a, like if somebody uses an index in the pocket and the trick is that somebody names a card and you pull that card from your pocket and they go, have you got every card in the deck in your pocket? Which is always the method they guess. Even if they're too polite to say it, they're right. That's why I think it's important to disguise it in any other way than just doing that. So, A, is it, do you think that the effect is weaker or stronger than if it is out in play from the very beginning, or they don't know where it's going and then suddenly you say, you know, from the beginning, oh, there's my phone, in the back of my phone is a card. Now I will say that there's a debate to be had over using a signed card from a deck, because that's much more impossible than a named card. So that I do know there's different like lines here.
Yeah.
But So A, is it weaker or stronger to have the card out in the open from the beginning? And B, then if not B, I suppose part the second part to this is that if it's weaker, then the method is generally harder to do when it's beyond the open.
Yeah.
So are we making more work for ourselves to weaken the magic by not thinking about the core of the routine? I don't know about you, man. This might seem so inconsequential to so many of our listeners, but to me, this is the type of stuff that like I obsess over. And I feel like to the audience that like you do get wildly different outcomes in terms of perception.
Yeah.
Or the difference in what they perceive is wildly different. And although to us, it may just be like, oh yeah, place it out in the open. Or I'm just going to reveal it from this, you know.
Yeah. I honestly do think it's effect dependent and audience dependent, because I can tell the type of person, if I'm performing, I can tell the type of person who's going to want to see something where a card appears more than they're going to want to see a folded up card. But sometimes someone is quite happy to see a more grounded kind of sitting across the table in a beer garden. The card is on. I think maybe it's one of those things where there's something to be found by finding some kind of a middle ground or a completely separate approach.
Yeah, my head goes to that. If it's going to be the latter, which is to have it as a shock reveal, then it needs to be like impossible or completely like out of left field. So, for example, if you started off with a box for a mystery box, you place the mystery box down. It's kind of not really anything. And when you reveal there's a card inside, then you, like obviously mystery box plays huge. Don't get me wrong. I know that. I'm not a fool. But would you get more of a reaction, thus giving you a much bigger opportunity for misdirection, if part of the effect was the appearance of the card? So when you reveal a card in a mystery box, for example, or a wallet, I mean, normally you will get at least one or two spectators reacting to that alone.
Yeah.
But that's not like, to me, that's not a trick. That's not an effect. That is just opening the box. But if you had like, say, an empty clear box and then that card materialized in that box, magically appeared, right? Now that's an effect. That's now, it's given you part of the effect for free in a way. And if I know from experience that like when you do things like this, more of your audience react, and a lot of them assume the trick's done.
Right. Okay.
Do you know where I'm going with it now?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a weird one because this is one of those things where I do like to think about what would work best and what would play best. But this in particular, I think because I have the hang up of loving an isolated object, maybe I just, I'm kidding myself.
Yeah, it's a super, I suppose it's subjective, isn't it? Like, there's many different like strings to this bow, but on a complete like surface level, typical. I know there's no such thing as a typical, but I suppose there is like, there's not a typical layman, but there are typical types of layman.
Yeah.
I'm thinking more like bar environment, coffee shop, chilling, friends environment, as opposed to, well, coffee shop maybe is not so much, but like. But in my head, where my normal environment is like bar stuff.
Yeah.
Bar, small group of people. That's where I would generally perform if I went to bars. I don't even go there anymore. But you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100% same.
And to me, I think those people would react to something like, yeah, the card materializes in your hand or in a box. Or there's something about that David Stone cell, which I think is crazy compared to a mystery box, because it's an object they're used to and then it's like stuck inside it, as opposed to a suspicious box. And you're like, and they're like, oh, that's why it's there.
Okay. So next time I go to a bar, if instead of putting the card down on the table in front of me, I were to put an object, I were to put a Zippo and not draw attention to it, And then maybe I'd have a script where my nan taught me a trick when I was younger, where she would pull a card out of a deck face down and tell me to name any card. And then she'd run the flame underneath. And when she turned it over, it was the card that I had named. So I would like to try and do that. They name a card. They name the three of spades. And I try it on a card. And I can't get it to light. So I ask to refill it. If anyone has any gas. And then.
Oh.
The card that they named, there's a torn out piece stuck inside my Zippo. Damn.
That's great.
So do you think that would be better than me just having the three of spades down?
Yeah. I definitely think that would be better, because I think that moment when the back is to them, if you open it towards you, I think you'll get a reaction there.
Yeah.
Right? Like, oh my goodness, no. Could it? It can't be. I think there's actually different ways to categorize these performances.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
There's, let's say A, is it's been in full view the entire time. The only reaction you're going to get is the moment it's revealed to be the card,
mm-hmm.
right? Then there's B, which is the card is found in an object that's unlikely for it to have been there, which is then stuck in a lighter, mystery box, potentially, right? Or in your wallet. And then there's option C, which is the card, you know, you have empty hands and the card materializes at your fingertips. So then I suppose option A gives you one reaction. Option B gives you partial reaction. I'd say, I'm not sure what it would be. It'd be there's a word for it. I wouldn't quite say reaction, like they're experiencing magic, but almost like a no way moment, like a terabang.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's a question mark with a, and then the option C gives you a trick and a reaction, and then the reveal.
Okay.
So another reaction. So you get two, and then, so A gives you one, B gives you 1.5, and then C gives you two moments of magic.
Yeah.
That's probably the way I'd phrase it, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's a decent way of categorizing it. I get so hesitant about sounding like this is it. This is like something is static and it's sealed in time and stone.
Analog.
I hate being super, not dismissive, but I hate like saying yes, 100% that is it. Just because I change my mind so often about magic.
Yeah.
You know, every couple of months I've got a new little mantra in my head about what I think is magic.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not saying one is better than the other. I'm not trying to get to that. I'm not trying to say that at all, but I'm just thinking, like, I personally, I've never quantified it that way.
Yeah.
Categorized it in that sense of, I've always, right, in my head, it's always just been mystery card plot.
Yeah.
That's it. But I don't think it is as clear cut as just saying mystery card. I think you've got, I'd probably say, like, in the hand that we open is mystery card. That's a mysterious mm-hmm. card. The second one is card to location. And the third one is appearing card.
Okay, I know what a good scale for it could be. Because one of them is an opener. One of them is like an in-between trick. It's a regular worker kind of thing. And one of them is a closer.
Okay. Which one would you say is which?
In that order, like your order.
Really? So the one in the open is the opener?
Yeah, you're leading them in. That's realistic. It's grounded.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that could be done, right? It's a 1 in 52 chance.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, where it's 1.5 reaction on the reaction scale, is no way. Like, no way did you get it in there. Number three is impossible. It comes from nowhere.
Yeah.
Oh, Jake, yeah, see. That's good.
You know, speaking with Rich Relish lately, that's like his whole thing is building up the impossibility. And you were in the car with him the other day to Darren Brown. You know, that's what he's about.
Yeah. So. It's something I never considered before, but it's actually really important, I think, to not go in with your, after what listening to him, basically, which is to not go in with your absolute impossible nuclear bomb fooler where the rest of your material isn't that powerful.
Yeah, that for many different reasons.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think Richard's probably the best person to talk to about this, as opposed to us just like destroying it. But anyway, right, so all that being said, was method-wise, take me to the method, which is when you do it in version A, where it's been out in the open the entire time, there's all the scrutiny is here. Version B and C sort of rely here, but more so C, which is, so version B being where it's in a lighter and they just can't believe it's been in there. Version C is where it appears from nowhere. The thing with more so version C, where it appears out of thin air or in a clear box or anything, is that you get that reaction to the card appearing.
Yeah.
And often, that's a trick in itself. E, for a lot of the audience, the trick is over then. Like, oh, he's made the card that I'm thinking. Not over, not like the trick is done. But to a lot of people, they've decided that if you can do that, of course it's my card.
Yeah.
And I think you leave yourself open to a much bigger opportunity to switch. I know you leave yourself open to a better opportunity to switch because so much of the heat is off you whilst they're still reacting. Or just like under the assumption that it is the card already. When you compare it back to version A, that moment is all here.
Yeah.
All here. But it's, you know, right into the very last moment that card is shown, whereas the C, so it basically gives you a lot of scope, is what I'm saying, method-wise, to do. You could even be as basic bitch as doing a shuttle pass of a folded card.
Yeah.
To reveal it, because there's so little heat on you. But I also think, in retrospect for the audience, they're going to be less likely to accuse you of switching the card with version C.
Yeah.
Right? No one's, if they see a card, let's just imagine there's a method, I have one, where, I'm not going to show it here, but where you can make a card appear in slow motion, right? A folded card can appear visually, ultra visually, in slow motion. Yeah, and then so let's imagine this is the effect, right? I'll run through two effects with you. One is version A. Jake, I'm going to place this card, fold it out in full view the entire time, right from the very beginning. Name any playing card.
Eight of Hearts.
No moves, no funny business. I'm going to open this card up and show you that it's the Eight of Hearts. All right?
Go on then.
That's version A. He's a double backer, I can't do it. version C is this. Jake, name any single playing card in the deck.
Six of Diamonds.
Look, at my fingertips, with no moves, a card is going to visually, in slow motion, appear. Star Trek thing. And then it's there. Hmm. Boom. Like, literally like CGI. And then I hand it to you, and you can see it. Six of Diamonds. I don't think anyone cares. No one's going to be thinking about, like, they don't think you're going to switch the card after, because they're thinking, how did you make it appear? How did that slow motion appear in front of my eyes? Like, the concept of the switch, I think, is off the table.
Yeah.
Even after they've opened it up to see it's your card, because they're not thinking about the switch. They're thinking about the visual. And it's quite easy to make a card visually appear. You could use a quiver. You could use like a bunch of different, like, you know, you could use a gimmick, a device to make a card appear. You could just do palming. You know, just have it like appear at your fingertips, whatever. But there's a lot more scope in terms of visual appearances than there are like under the radar, under the microscope, player hand or gimmick switches when you're doing it at the exact moment they think you're going to do it.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting that we're talking about this because this is episode 20 and way back 21 weeks ago, because we missed a week. Episode 1 was the isolated card.
Was it?
Yeah. Like hearing. And a couple of... earlier on, I can't remember which episode it was, I spoke about a peering card effect that I had done once at a party that was kind of just out the blue. But that didn't focus on the visual aspect. It was kinetic, I guess. Yeah. It was the... Yeah. It was just palming a card that was like a makeshift index. and the card that this person had named, and then holding hands and shaking it, and then they felt the moment it appeared in their hands.
Oh, do you know what? Like, going back to the beginning of the episodes, dude, what you could do is say to someone, this is, you say to them, this is my, this is not what I need to do, but you say, this is my totem. This is my lucky totem. It's not, it's just a picture of a dog, but it could be anything, right? But this sort of...
It looks like a back shot of a headless man. That's butt
cheeks.
Oh
my goodness. That looks like Dougie to me. You can tell which one of us lives alone, which one of us lives with a child in the house. But you could say to someone, I want you to hold this behind your back. And as you do, you switch it for a folded card. But they think they're holding a bank business card, complete, which is a different shape, which is the more important thing. Now you say, name a playing card. They do. They bring this out from behind their back. And you now have this shock that it's changed to a card. At which point, you could be as ballsy to take it out of their hand and say, oh, hold your other hand out. And then, you know, you come in and switch it for them. Because they're more freaking out that it's changed.
Yeah.
As opposed to that. But which is something we discussed in one of the first episodes, which was having a torn and restored card happen behind the back, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, just something I was thinking about, looking at performance. I was really fortunate enough the last week in Miami to see Javier perform a lot of magic to people. Mm. And there's nothing like watching. I really genuinely believe Javier's one of the best performers in the world.
Yeah.
Just in a natural environment, just riffing, doing magic tricks, walking up to people. He's incredible. And I've seen a lot. You know, I've seen a lot of magicians. But it gave me time to reflect on, you know, watching when people were reacting, the moments that lay people were reacting to versus what magicians react to. But getting to view a really good performer doing it and then being the fly on the wall, as opposed to like, if you perform yourself, you think they react to stuff. But actually, if you ever get a chance to watch yourself perform a video, they don't. It's not necessarily the same way you picture it.
Yeah.
So being able to watch a magician, actually a really good magician, do his thing, it just made me think, like, oh, actually, there's moments here when they're reacting to stuff, and you see an opportunity or an exploitation zone, such as the difference. Just, I mean, he didn't do this thing, but such as the difference between a card just being out in the open to making it appear, small, tiny potential thing.
Yeah,
but actually, opens you up to a much, much more method, which puts you under less scrutiny, gives you more opportunity, makes your life a lot easier. But it also gives you an extra moment of magic too. So that's something that was like running through my head. It wasn't mystery card that I'd actually seen that made me think of this, but it was something that I like connected dots on.
Mm.
It's all about magic. Sorry.
No, not at all. It's interesting because, you know, I don't particularly perform card magic too much. Or, you know, there'll always be a deck there. Whenever I go out, there's always a deck. But it's purely be the basics or some favorites or like some old things that I've came up with. But I still do have a little bit of I like to think of it as like cardonomics. And it's to do with the efficiency and like of a trick, whether or not you're capitalizing on every moment that you can capitalize on.
Yeah.
Because so many people just will not give a trick a chance to land, give an effect a chance to land. Every time I have a deck of cards on a table, I will say, name a card and cut to any card. And it doesn't hit, you know, the vast majority of the time. Obviously, it's not going to hit all the time, but it's so easy to just wash it away and say, obviously, that's not going to work.
What'd you say? 1 in 52?
Yeah.
Throw it away, and if they hit it, don't do anything else.
But capitalizing on like the economics of a trick by going back and figuring out all the moments where you could have got a better reaction by adding something a little bit earlier, or it is interesting.
I'll tell you this for free, because this is something that happened on the deck shoot. We got into a couple of live performances. And the groups were great, actually. I don't get too much into it because it's a story for me and half to tell. but one of the things that really changed the reactions, black and white, and this is something I'm not a seasoned performer, so this is alien territory to me. But some performers are probably like, yeah, duh, but this is a 101. But literally, I said to have, in the next performance, do this, and you're going to get much bigger reactions.
Hmm.
I don't know if you can guess what it is. One thing that he did, but it literally, like, flip a coin, heads, tails, difference. Do you want to know what it was?
I would love to know what it was, if you're willing to share.
Yeah, it's the most basic thing ever. It was the moment he had them sign a card.
Hmm.
The minute he put a Sharpie in their hands and said, sign a card, every group went from being like, ugh, I don't know, right, this is the perception I had of what was going on in their head. It could be a different thing, I don't know what it was, but it was almost like he was showing them card tricks, and it was like, oh, this guy's showing us card tricks. Well, let's entertain him, or what's he going to do? The minute he put a Sharpie in their hand and said, can you sign this card? There's literally two videos where people literally squeal with excitement. The moment, the one group, he did. He handed them the card to sign halfway through, and that's when they changed. And I was like, "Oh, they're complete!" And they were like, "Oh!" And then I said, "Next performance, do have them sign a card straight away. Just have them. The first thing they do, just." And the next group, he literally goes over to them. He goes, "Can you sign? Take a card, sign it." And they go, and it's almost like what I perceive it as is the difference between somebody doing tricks, and then, oh my gosh, I've seen real magicians have people do, like, oh, proper magicians do this. I'm about to see a proper magic trick.
Yeah.
And so that's what we did. Every group that we went to from that point in, well, there's a few occasions which you'll understand when people see the trailer, you don't get the chance to have them sign for a cool reason. But every group that he had the chance to, especially if they're a little bit, like, stiff before as he's starting up, as soon as he had them the Sharpie, different energy, which is something I need to remember till my dying day when I perform magic.
Yeah,
get that Sharpie in their hands as soon as possible.
It's a reason why people carve names into trees, and you know that break rooms exist. Like, people like defacing things.
Yeah, I that could literally be it. I felt it as more of, now he's, oh, this guy's legit.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
I'm going to see something cool. I don't know what. Or oh, I've seen this guy do this like this on TV. As opposed to somebody going to show him like a 21 card trick, you know?
Yeah. There's something to be said for that recognition of not a cliche, but like an archetype. I've been on nights out where I've performed like basic, like subtle kind of magic. Things with where words are written down, or where it's like bar tricks, and if I was to ask the person I was with, they wouldn't say I was doing magic, maybe. But if I pulled out a deck of cards and asked them to sign it, they'd be like, "Oh, it's magic."
Yeah, yeah, true. Maybe it's just that it's audience participation in an extent that isn't pick a card.
Yeah, I think it's probably all of those reasons is what. I think it is it's definitely important.
The other odd thing is that walking up to people and having them name a card, a lot of people are like, what? And they're completely caught out of left field unless you explicitly say to them. Whereas if you start with a piece of card magic or show them the deck,
yeah,
and then have them name the card, they jump to the point much quicker.
Yeah.
There's a funny one.
I love that. What's your favorite card? It's like the playing cards, dude. I don't have a favorite playing card.
Yeah, exactly. But also, I thought there could be a funny piece there to like as an extra like one degree, which is a lot of people thought you say what card, and you could say you could actually have like an index of like the major car brands: Hyundai, Nissan, Ford, Land Rover, whatever, somewhere, right? Like extra. So then you say name a car. And then you name car brand, right?
Jeep.
No. I mean a playing card. Like name a playing card.
Two of diamonds.
Great. So now you produce the two of diamonds from anywhere. And then and then you're like, ah, great. I guess a piece of magic. Wait for as long as you can. Say, but you did actually think I was asking you to name a car, right? And you said Jeep. So crazy why I wrote Jeep on the back. And then that would just be like,
that's great.
But it's just like, because it's a mistake. I think because it's like a mistake that actually turns into magic, that's like one of those crossover things. But yeah, that Sharpie tip, super duper.
Sometimes it's very easy to forget about any kind of participation. That thankfully, usually because I perform to like one or two people, there has to be participation. There has to be some element of it there.
Yeah, there's got to be. So that was my little. I did write some other notes down on like performances, not in terms of the deck shoe, but in a different context. Did you have any topics that you wanted to cover?
Well, before we started recording, because we started recording a little bit late, even though I got here early, because we ended up spending 2 hours catching up and then falling down a bit of a rabbit hole with some off-air things. But I quite enjoyed what we were talking about with dreams. We were speaking a little bit about incorporating dreams into an effect, and I didn't really have any ideas, and you just right off the bat came up with some really cool stuff.
Well, it was only, I wouldn't have, yeah, it was a bit of a thing. Should we tell them what we did?
It's up to you.
Maybe we could try this with everyone at home.
Maybe. Do it. Yeah, we've got to have audience interaction.
Yes. If you're watching at home, if you're watching at YouTube or listening on any streaming services, then just do this along with us. I'm going to pick up the one that I used earlier. You're all going to attempt to read my mind, specifically my dreams, but not even just my dreams, my nightmares. So I have a fairly common nightmare that keeps recurring, and I want to try and think about what it is. Okay, so it's not drowning, I'll tell you that. So just think about it and type it in the comment section of YouTube. Maybe write it in the Facebook group before you listen to the rest. But I've written it down, my common nightmare on here that I keep having. And write it, press enter, have a think. Press enter, send it somewhere. And maybe you go to theblackartflow.com and you type it as a message to us before we get it. Either way, I'm going to give you like 10 more seconds, or you can press pause before I tell you what it is. I got it right with Jake, but then I'll probably get it wrong with mostly all of you. But I think that time's elapsed now.
Yeah.
So the nightmare, and I'll say this is common to me. Like I keep saying, it's a common nightmare, but this is common to me. I've actually only ever heard of one person have this nightmare before. But I say it's common because it happens a lot. And then so I'm going to turn it over, and it says teeth out, teeth falling out. So that's the reveal. I wonder how many people got that right or wrong. I did a bit of reframing there. It's actually a super common dream, but I try to make it seem like, oh, I've only ever heard of one person that is common to me, or I commonly have it, so that I can make it feel like it's a bigger, broader range later on.
Yeah, I really like that. And I would be interested to see how many people wrote that down.
It would be super interesting. I'd love to hear. But yeah, I just thought like it's one of those dreams that's like a fringe dream. There's a fringe nightmare where people think of like drowning. You thought of drowning and teeth out, or drowning with your teeth out or something you said, didn't you?
Yeah. Because that was a nightmare I had the other night.
And then there's ones of like being able to like run but not get anywhere, or punch underwater. Nightmares of people dying. Maybe say it's not a morbid one, it's not too crazy. But either way, you've got a pretty good chance of it, of people saying teeth out, and it's kind of one of the ones that feels random.
Yeah.
Yeah. But where else were you going with it? Like, what was your starting block, and what was the direction you were going in?
Well, I was just thinking of ways that you could use a one ahead with it to try and, I guess, I don't know. It was probably a lot more interesting in my head, because it wasn't a fully fleshed out idea. But I like the idea of having multiple elements of a dream and asking them separately. You know, like, where do you think my dream was? Like, who do you think was there?
Oh.
So that it could easily be one-headed, or, you know, some other methods, it could be peaked or anything at all.
What if, so there's only one piece of information you need to force, right? Mm-hmm. All right, let me try this, Jake. I'm having a nightmare. Yeah. First, I'm going to take three cards. All right. So these have got animals on the back, I think. So ignore the animals that I draw. But first part of the nightmare then. I'm going to think, you think about the location it takes place. Got it?
Okay, yeah.
All right, I'm going to write a prediction. Okay, I've made my prediction here. I'm going to place it the top of this gimmick. Okay, second part of the nightmare, a little weird. That was an attempt at a dog.
Part of the nightmare.
I want you to think about what happens in this nightmare.
Okay.
All right. Oh, but what was the location, boy?
Naples, Italy.
Oh, I was way off. Second part of the nightmare, think about what happens in the nightmare. Okay. Mm-hmm. Got it? Right. Yeah. Committed now. And then the last part, what was it that happened? I'm so bad at this.
A volcano erupted.
Oh my goodness.
Vesuvius.
And then the last one I'm going to write down before we do this is I want you to think about the weather. What was the weather doing?
Okay.
Got it?
Yeah.
We shouldn't have used these ones, but. All right. So let me do this. I'll move in this order. First place you said was Naples. Second is eruption. And what was the weather?
It was a thunderstorm.
Oh, I was close. I put rain.
Close enough.
As soon as you said eruption, which is the most random nightmare I've ever heard, I was like, well, game over. I would just assume that it was going to be rain in any other nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah, so is that what you were thinking? Like, what I had in that context? Obviously not as terribly performed as that, but...
Yeah, well, what one ahead in that context, and then when we spoke about it a little bit further, the fact that teeth falling out was so common was, I was kind of thinking you could go down that method as having that as the piece of information that you needed. So, you know, if you were to ask about a location, the weather or an event, and then something that was happening to me, and kind of rely on the fact that they were going to say teeth falling out.
Yeah. Well, like we were saying off, you could just have an index or an out system of all the common nightmares, because there's only a handful, right? There's drowning or falling, someone, a death, teeth falling out, punching or running with no power. What are the other ones? Dreams of spiders, insects?
Maybe. It is...
Losing a limb?
I do not think the list is that long. Most people's nightmares are the same. It's you know, the events are in it, obviously, but the actual...
But especially if you frame it as, a common nightmare as opposed to, like, a general... And that's why you say, I want you to read my mind. I've had a fairly common nightmare. And then you reframe it to, like, this nightmare is quite a common occurrence for me. It's quite a random one, but, you know, you said not many people I've spoken to have had the same nightmare as me. You know, so you're changing that context of the word common as opposed to common for everyone. You said commonly occurs to me. I don't know.
That's quite a nice reframe, and I think I might use that in some other stories. Wholesale steal it from you.
One of the other ideas we had was is to have them think of any nightmare or any dream. And you say, so think of the last nightmare or dream that you vividly had. Okay, and have you ever looked into dreams? Have you ever looked into what they represent?
Mm-hmm.
So you say this, and now beforehand you have a prediction or an envelope on the table, and now you can bring out potentially like a book of dream interpretations or an app or a website that tells you dream interpretations. And you say to them, what was the dream about? And they tell you, and you scan through the book or the website, and you find the most closest linked thing to that dream. And so I think whatever it was in our off air, we say, this means that it's work related stress. Actually, you know, even though it's a dream about insects walking off a cliff or dying or whatever, this is actually a work related stress dream. And when you go through the rest of the book, nothing else is work related stress or this very specific interpretation, which is going to appeal to everyone. But you say, like, this is the only one in this book that is related to work-related stress or da 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 da. And then your reveal says work-related stress. So you're not revealing exactly what they had as a dream, you're revealing what the interpretation of their dream is, which you can basically force onto any dream. But that sort of, to them, verifies what the that you predicted their dream.
Yeah, 100%.
You said you could do like a thumb writer thing on the back.
Oh yeah.
To get to put like a little kicker.
That'd be fun. It'd be interesting. It's strange, you know, because obviously a lot of this type of stuff, the vast majority of people will be like, that's hokum, you know, dream interpretation, Jungian shadow work, whatever it is. But if you're in a charity shop and you see a book that is like, you know, interpret your dreams, buy it for 50p, because stuff like that is just perfect, like fair aisle for reading and anything at all like that is perfect. I've got a whole bookshelf that's just full of stuff that I, in no way, shape or form do I believe, but it is fertile ground for plotting and story and script. It's gorgeous imagery.
And on top of that, if people don't think that a lot of people are very, very, very interested in these topics.
Yeah.
I think often if people listen to this, generally would be magicians, you know, and we tend to surround ourselves with like-minded folk. As a magician, you are in the mindset of a skeptic.
Yeah.
You spend your time with, you know, if you spend time with people that share interests with you, we're going to fall into those categories. And oftentimes, if you don't spend time with people who are skeptics and you spend time with people who are believers in religion, faith, spiritualism, mysticism, astrology, star sign, whatever, you'll find that some people are just, they know you and they just, I'm not hyped about like chatting about something like this. You know, you find sometimes people like don't, even if they don't know you're a magician or a skeptic, they generally, a lot of people just don't chat about it.
Yeah.
But it comes up, you'd be surprised really how many people find this stuff fascinating. And just often it's either they don't talk about it or they haven't actually thought about it. But when it gets brought up as a topic, it's like, oh, that is really interesting. It's kind of like, right. Kind of like the Titanic sinking. Mm. It's a topic that's really interesting, but recently, yeah, that's why I am thinking of it, because all of some reason, it's a topic that's kind of universally captivates people, but it's not a common topic like politics or education and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, you kind of given someone permission to talk about something that they might be embarrassed to talk about usually. Yeah. You know, if you have got some kind of presentation that involves elements of Reiki, someone might be excited to be like, oh, actually I do know like this, I do know that. I've had it a bunch of times when I've brought something up and you could tell that someone's excited because they have read about it, but maybe they don't talk about it in work because it's a bit
yeah honestly this, so what we're saying is like don't be afraid to bring it up with someone, and if they're not interested, you can make any topic interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything could be interesting. Go and look at a good TED talk. Go and look on YouTube at the Moth channel about people telling stories. If you don't think any topic can be interesting, think again. Look at Penn and Teller performing the children's ball vase effect, and an example of taking anything and making it hugely interesting to watch or listen to.
Yeah, I mean, people say that, you know, like, oh, storytellers are born, not created, but that you can want, that's 100% a skill you can learn to be interesting.
Yeah, no, storytelling is something that, like, some people are just great at it, but some of the best ones are learned storytellers.
Mm-hmm.
Better than some of the ones who were born gifted.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was just gonna go back to, I absolutely adore finding weird books in charity shops, but go on, what were you gonna say? Sorry.
No, what I was going to say is that, like, when you get into astrology, mysticism and stuff, it's different to magic tricks where you pick a card, lose the card, I find your card. It's linear and it's analog. There's a correct and wrong, there's a correct answer and a right answer, you know? And that's it. And then it can be backtracked. But when you do a piece of magic, when you perform something that has a touch or an element or an overarching theme of astrology with Barnum statements thrown in and things like this, it sort of really blurs those lines of reality. You often will have a much stronger connection with whoever you're performing with.
Mm-hmm.
But also when they look back, then it's not so much a black and white trick. And oftentimes they can read, like, if you do if someone picks a card, or they look at, they choose a card that they see, and you tell them a reading about themselves based off the card that they picked, you don't know what the card is, and eventually you reveal that you knew what it was because the type of person you perceive them to be. And throughout that cold reading, you get a couple of hits, which they'll remember over the misses. Then when you reveal the card, they feel this connection with you. But when they think back about it, there is no method. A cold statement, a cold reading really doesn't have like a definitive, oh, double lift, top change. There isn't really a method. So when you get it right, it kind of verifies everything that you did. And they feel like you did something real.
Dude, like, recently I've been writing up a bunch of effects that I've came up with over the past, like, 2 decades or so, just so I can have, like, kind of a complete list for myself. And when I'm going through it, it's so surprising realizing that, like, you know, a third of the stuff that I've thought up, there's no real method. It's just a thing.
Yeah. A hook.
Yeah.
A little point.
Which I absolutely love. It's just something small and subtle like that. A magician is not going to look at it and say that's magic, but I think it's magic. And I'm pretty sure that, like, the spectator is going to say that was magic.
Yeah. I mean, dude, for me, it's something peripheral, on the peripherals, but that little thing of somebody being handed a Sharpie,
yeah,
that nugget of knowledge is, I'm probably the last man to notice it, you know, because I perform so little. But that was such a revelation to me that I'm hoping I remember to carry that for all my years until maybe there's something else which opens up spectators. But I've done so many years of film and magicians perform, and it was almost like a little, oh my God, moment. Mm.
Dude, I think if someone is not finding a moment like that every single time they perform, then they're not interested in learning anymore, because every time I do an effect, there's something else I learn.
Yeah.
There's something else I notice and realize, oh, that's a bit weird. When I tore the corner that time, I was standing to the left of them, and they were completely blindsided here. I could do something with their pocket there. If you're not learning something every single time you do an effect, like, you're not, I don't understand. You could,
yeah, you're always the student, never the master. And if you think you know it all, you know nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But one more thing, I was reading my notes today. One more thing, maybe we'll just let people simmer over this because we've come up for another hour-long episode. I've been watching some magicians performing on YouTube, watching general like gig performances, webbing performances. One of the tricks which gets the strongest reaction in every performance is signed cards in envelope in wallet.
Yeah,
it's crazy big reaction. Like, it is. That's why it's the finale of most wedding performers in the UK, at least, set right. It's another story whether everyone should be doing that trick or not. Right, just because I can't tell you, I don't know the names of, I can't remember who I watched because everyone does it. It's just all blend into one. That's my worst nightmare, is being confused for another magician. That being said, I haven't seen any magician. I've seen this being done before, obviously, but I haven't seen any magician do this for such a big trick. Would it change the effect, the dynamic of the effect? Would it play bigger, or would it make it weaker? Because there may be a no shock section, or there may be like a oh no way section. If you started the card to envelope effect, so card to envelope to wallet, if before you begin, you walk up to the group of people, say, hi, I'm Jake, I'm Lloyd, I'm going to show you some magic this evening. Hold on. You take an envelope, you place a playing card inside there, seal it, put in your wallet, put it away. Then do your whole routine. At the very end, your card's been signed, da, 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 at the very end, go back to the wallet, bring out the envelope with a signed card inside that you started with. Would that enhance it? Would it make it weaker? For some people, it's like that, like MacGuffin style callback, or you know, it's the car crash at the start of the movie, then 90 minutes of, you know, is it, for some people it's like, you know, and also could you frame it differently? Like, could you do Patrick Coon's timeline and tell people you're gonna go back in time 10 minutes And then they're like, what do you mean? And you say, remember, start, I had an envelope, and inside the envelope with a card. You know, or does it, or by doing it that way, does it kill the surprise, the total surprise of inside my wallet? I have a wallet inside my wallet. There's an envelope. Can you guess what's inside there? Because they don't know for certain that it's a card up until they open it and turn it over. Or is it the fact that they start to draw the lines, the dot, they put two, there's two dots here, they draw they draw the lines between the two dots, and they, yeah, they abseil down a zip line. No, they draw the line between the two connecting dots, and the fact that they can see the car crash coming before it happens, or they can almost get feel like they're ahead of everyone else. Is that strong? I don't know.
I would love for someone to leave multiple paragraph long comment answering you and leave it to Simo with them.
I'd love somebody to perform it three times one way and three times another way to different people. So one way they take a card before they do anything, I'll take a card, put it in a wallet, don't show anyone the wallet, and put it in an envelope in a wallet. Probably better just do a separate wallet so one's set up and just one just gets put on the way, so it's duplicate. And then at the very end of the routine, you reveal that from the very beginning, first thing you do is put their signed card in an envelope before they even signed it. Or it's a shock thing.
Yeah, someone go perform it as an opener, an in-between and a closer.
One thing I'll say is that if you perform it with a blue deck, then do it with put a red card in the envelope, and at the very end, force a red back card in a blue deck, but hide the back.
Yeah.
And now, you know, when you palm it out, they'll never believe they even or realize they signed a red back card.
Hmm.
And from there, you when you will get that element of surprise. So, you know, before we got to put something in my wallet, inside my wallet was an envelope, and inside that envelope, I've got a red card. They would know what's on that red card. You turn it over to be their signed card that they thought was blue from inside the deck. You know, I get godlike reactions or not. Anyway, folks.
Let's do it.
What an episode. I feel like I've talked, as always, nonstop.
Dude, you know that's my fault. My brain isn't fully active right now. And I know I say that as an excuse quite a lot, but I'm operating on the low energy mode because of a lack of calories. But
that's fair.
I'll be back to being a mildly twat next time.
We nearly made it the whole episode. Go check us out on Facebook, Instagram, all those good places. The easiest way to find us is go to the Black Art. theblackartcode.com, and there's a link to our Facebook group where you can chat. If you're watching on YouTube, leave some comments down below. We also have merch, which is dope. We have a Band of Glory Black Art podcast or Black Art Code t-shirt. Go and check out the merch section on the website. And if you've made it this far into the video, then as always, leave a comment down below. What's the phrase of doom going to be this week, Jay?
Secret sauce.
Secret sauce. Leave a comment saying secret sauce in the video down below. Thank you all so much. If you've listened this far, for tuning in, I've been Lloyd.
I've been Jake.
And we will see you all next Wednesday.
Peace.